this week on Out on the Air features the lead actor in the film Christmas in Chicago, Julian Griffith, also discussing his sports training academy, Juiced Up Athletics. Next Grammy-nominated violinist, Anna Marie Williams, member of the critically acclaimed Neve Trio, discussing the release of their new album, La Mire. Our spotlights on the Port County Symphony's February 7th concert, The Roaring Twenties, a celebration of America's Jazz Age.
Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. You're in the know with Esther and Larry. Art on the air today. Stay in the know with Larry and Esther. Art on the air our way. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world.
Welcome. You're listening to Art on the Air on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, WVLP, 103.1 FM, our weekly program covering the arts and arts events throughout Northwest Indiana and beyond. I'm Larry Breckner of New Perspectives Photography, right alongside here with Esther Golden of The Nest in Michigan City.
Aloha, everyone.
We're your hosts for Art on the Air. Art on the Air is heard every Sunday at 7 p.m. on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, also streaming live at lakeshorepublicmedia.org. And is available on Lakeshore Public Media's website as a podcast. Also heard on Friday at 11 a.m. and Monday at 5 p.m. on WVLP 103.1 FM, streaming live at WVLP.org. Our spotlight interviews are also heard Wednesdays on Lakeshore Public Media. Information about Art on the Air is available at our website, breck.com/AOTA. That includes a complete show archive, spotlight interviews, plus our show is available on multiple podcast platforms, including NPR One. Please like us on Facebook, Art on the Air, WVLP, for information about upcoming shows and interviews. I'd like to welcome back to Art on the Air Spotlight from the LaPorte County Symphony Orchestra, and it's the Executive Director, Emily Yannis, and she's going to talk about what's coming up in February, February 7th. They have a whole new kind of fun concert coming up, not that all their concerts aren't fun, and she's going to talk about that, plus maybe a few other things that are happening in the season. Emily, welcome back to Art on the Air Spotlight.
Thank you. So glad to
be here. Yeah, it's always nice to see you.
So you had your holiday concert. Unfortunately, I wasn't able to be at it, but just tell us a little bit about that. I know that's probably one of your best attended concerts.
It sure is. And this year was even more well attended than the last two that I've been a part of. So yeah, huge audience, full balcony, everybody left smiling and happy and in the holiday spirit. So lots of fun. Illumination sang, Becky Osborne's group Illumination sang beautifully. And our principal horn, Jason Smith, played a beautiful solo. So we got to be treated to some of those special performances.
What special things did you else have happening at that? Did you have any guy in the red suit show up?
No, not this year, no. But we did have a lot of Santa hats. There were many, many Santa hats in the orchestra and in the audience.
Okay. Well, you know, I think about the previous executive director. He might make a good Santa. Maybe we could talk him into that sometime.
True. Yeah, I agree. I don't know, though. I don't know.
He's pretty jolly on his own, so.
He is. That's right. That's right.
Well, your February 7th concert, talk about that. That's kind of looks like a whole different type of thing you have coming up with some of the things.
Yeah, it's the second in our America the Beautiful series for our subscription concerts for this season. We are celebrating American music with the 250th anniversary of the Declaration of Independence signing in 1776. So 2026 will be full of lots of those celebrations, I'm sure. And we started ours off in November with our Dream of America concert, but we're continuing it here at LaPorte High School on February the 7th at 7 p.m., that's a Saturday, with a celebration of music from the Jazz Age, from the Roaring Twenties. So we're really excited to welcome a guest vocalist who specializes in this music, Rebecca Howell, to be singing some of the tunes and lots of familiar stuff that the audience will know, but really a celebration of all the music that came out of that era.
Well, and of course, jazz, thoroughly American music form, you know, coming out of ragtime and actually all minstrel shows and everything. And of course, American musical theater, you know, the jazz, especially the Roaring Twenties, was kind of the merger of all that.
Absolutely. Yeah. So we're going to have lots of songs from Cole Porter's Anything Goes, which is going to be really exciting. I just absolutely adore that musical. And then some Gershwin and Irving Berlin songs as well. So yes, those little seeds that grew into what we now know as American musical theater will be represented in this concert, which is very exciting.
Dress as in the Roaring Twenties. It'd be really fun to
get dressed up. And you say that, Esther, because I think we are going to make it a costume contest. We've been discussing among the staff some fun pre-concert activities we can do for this one, and we thought having a 1920s costume contest would be a lot of fun. So, well, after the new year, we'll start announcing more about that. I know most people aren't thinking too much past the new year, but we will definitely get all that info out, and a costume contest is in the works for sure.
Oh, so fun. You know, I've never heard the Chaplin Suite before.
The Chaplin Suite. So we've actually played a part of it at our summer outdoor concert in Michigan City. And it was received so well that Carolyn decided that she wanted to play the entire thing. It's by a modern living composer, Elena Rusanova, who I believe Carolyn actually knows personally. And it celebrates Charlie Chaplin and the music from the silent film era. So it's full orchestra. So it's just a really fun piece that we have played one movement of, but not the entire thing. So Carolyn thought it would be a lot of fun to include it on this program.
You know, the famous song that's associated with Charlie Chaplin, Smile, he actually wrote the lyrics to that, Smile, Though Your Heart Is Breaking.
A little bit of trivia here. Yeah, a little Charlie Chaplin trivia.
And where's this going to be performed at?
This will be at LaPorte High School in their very lovely brand new auditorium. I think it's maybe 5 years old now, but it's still very new and a beautiful space, lovely acoustic.
Very spacious.
It is, yeah. And we played there last year in February as well and just had a terrific time. So we also are going to bring back the instrument petting zoo. So we'll have instruments out in the lobby for people to try beforehand.
I know my grandson liked that. And you also had that other concert, which was also animal themed, several yes. animals for a petting experience.
That's
there.
Right. Yeah, I don't think we'll have any animals this time around. But
oh, that possum was so cute.
I know. I still like to look at the pictures of it.
Well, briefly, let's talk about just a couple other things, and we'll have other interviews about that. What do you have coming up in March and April?
That's right. In March, we return to the Holdcraft Performing Arts Center in Michigan City, where we will play a concert entitled The New World. And the centerpiece of that will be Dvorak's, his New World Symphony, Symphony No. 9. And he wrote that based on his experiences in America with African-American spiritual and Native American influences. And then we'll also be featuring two pieces about Abraham Lincoln, Aaron Copland's The Lincoln Portrait and Stella Song's Lincoln's Battle. So that will be a really wonderful, exciting program. Some familiar things with the New World Symphony, and then some new things that people may not have heard previously.
Tell us quickly about the current concert coming up in February once more.
February 7th, The Roaring Twenties, a celebration of music from the Jazz Age. It will be February the 7th, Saturday, 7 o'clock p.m. at LaPorte High School Performing Arts Center. Tickets are available online at lcso.net, and they will also be sold at the door.
And that's Emily Linus, Executive Director of the LaPorte County Symphony. Thanks so much for coming on Art of the Air and sharing your upcoming concert.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's always a pleasure to see you, Emily.
Art on the Air Spotlight and the complete one-hour program on Sunday is brought to you by Emberforge Consulting, with end-to-end expertise in learning strategy, design, and implementation. Emberforge turns your organization's knowledge into impact. To learn more, visit emberforgeconsulting.com. And as a reminder, if you'd like to have your event on Art on the Air Spotlight or have a longer feature interview, email us at aota@breck.com. That's aota@breck.com.
This is Raina Duras, host of World Cafe, and you're listening to Art on the Air on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, and on WVLP, 103.1 FM.
We are happy to welcome Julian Griffith to Art on the Air. Julian is a multi-talented actor, musician, baseball player, entrepreneur, philanthropist, and mentor, also one of an identical twin. He started acting at a young age, playing a lead role in the 2001 Chicago-featured movie Hardball, starring Diane Lane and Keanu Reeves, which was a number one box office hit for several weeks. He segued from acting to focus on his education and baseball. winning awards and contracts. In 2018, he once again changed direction and founded Juiced Up Athletics, a traveling sports training company that trains youth in baseball, softball, and other areas of fitness. He is also devoting himself to acting once again. We look forward to talking about the newly released charming movie, Christmas in Chicago. Thank you for joining us on Art on the Air. Aloha and welcome, Julian. It's very, very wonderful to meet you.
Thank you guys for having me. I greatly appreciate the opportunity.
Well, we appreciate you coming on the show. And I know your publicist reached out to Lakeshore. They punted it to us because we were an art show. And originally, we were going to just cover the release of the event, which we couldn't do. But we thought, this is an interesting interview. So that's what we want our audience to hear. We want to hear your origin story. Tell us how Julian got from where you were to where you are now. Tell us all about that.
Well, I definitely began acting unintentionally at 3 years old. Our mom, as you all mentioned, I'm an identical twin. We got chickenpox at the same time, on the same exact day. Ironic enough, right? And my mom had to stay home from work. She's also a former educator. And she started submitting us to agents because when we would be out in public, people would be like, oh my God, they're so adorable. They need to be on TV. And so that's how that happened. So I have been auditioning since I was 3 years old. And I did not book any acting roles until Hardball. Up until that point, I had only done print ad modeling. So I had done children's school books. I was in the Scott Forstmann books. I don't know if you all remember those from back in the day, the math books. I was holding clocks and all type of stuff. So I did those. And I booked Hardball after about 7 auditions. And I didn't think I was going to get it. I was just hoping that I would be able to play baseball in a movie. And you know, the rest is history, as you all mentioned, you know.
So did your brother go on that audition as well?
Yes, he went on audition. We were both up for the same role. Unfortunately, fortunately, he was my double in the film. So he was used. But his audition journey for Hardball ended. And please, Ramon, forgive me when you watch this interview, but we had a baseball game, and, you know, as a casting director, they want to see when you're auditioning kids, they want to see how personable you are. And my brother was bothered by the fact that we were going to show up to our baseball game late. And he let that be known when she came up to us. It was Claire Simon, you know, a big popular casting director out of Chicago. Shout out to Claire Simon for the opportunity. She comes up to us. She's like, hi, how are you? How are you feeling today? My brother's like, mad. She's like, why? And he was very vocal about it, because we're going to be late to our baseball game. And that was the last day he auditioned for Hardball. I can tell you, I did not give that response. And I beat out, you know, thousands of kids for the film.
Well, you know, seeing the movie, that would seem to be like an appropriate response to.
Yes, we most of us played baseball. So I played baseball. I had been playing baseball since I was 7. So again, I wasn't planning to be an actor. That wasn't in my deck of cards growing up. I was just auditioning, but I hadn't gotten anything. So, you know, I didn't come in with any expectation for it. Yeah. My mom's friend heard about the audition on the radio, and they had the audition at Evergreen Plaza Mall. And I had an agent, but we heard about the open call on the radio, and they said, go down to Evergreen Plaza Mall and audition.
Wow. So, Julian, as a child, because what, you're like 10, 11 years old when this—
10,
right?
When I did it. 10, yes.
10 years old. As a child, so there were no acting lessons. How do you filter those, like, intense emotions of that movie? I mean, it was an emotional movie.
I tell people all the time, I've gotten so many compliments about, oh my God, the way you just channeled that role. I was like, ironically enough, that was me in real life. I had asthma in real life. Obviously, I was the chubby kid in real life. There was no bodysuit on me. And I had a lisp. And I used to get picked on. So it was like, it was literally my life. It's just a different character. So it was natural to me. And to your point, yeah, I did not take an acting class until post-Hardball. So everything was natural because that was literally my life.
So what kind of support did you have from like the cast and crew then? What was like being on the set like with, you know, I don't know where, you know, because there were, you know, there were, it was like heavy youth, you know, there were a lot of children in it. So what was the atmosphere like?
The atmosphere, they immediately put us, we filmed in 3 months and they put us in like boot camp, if you will, for about 2 weeks at UIC. And we had an acting coach that we worked with, Bob Krakauer. And now we used to make fun of his name back then too, because it was spelled like O-er. So they used to be like, man, you old crack, Bob. But no, so Bob Krakauer was one of our acting coaches, and they led us through a lot of exercises to help stretch our range, channel emotions, and build camaraderie amongst each other, because most of us were relatively new, or this was either our first role or our biggest role. I mean, because you have people like Michael B. Jordan that started off in that film. All of us started off together, and that was his biggest role at that point in time. He had already done like a couple things, and Brian Hearn that had done Pootie Tang and a TV show or two. But most of us were relatively new. So we had the acting coach for 2 weeks and we had baseball training for 2 weeks, even though most of us played baseball. So we were training to be bad, though, at baseball. We had to train to be bad. Yes.
Well, you did this acting, but then around age 13, you sort of departed acting and actually concentrated on real baseball. So tell us about that transition.
Yeah, but that wasn't by choice, right? Let's hear the negotiation about that.
Yes. I was ready to move to L.A. I told my mom, quit your job. She was working for CPS at the time. And I'm like, I can carry us, Mom. I'm like, I'm getting all these auditions. I'm not booking them, but I'm getting them. And so I'm like, you know, I'm getting auditions for roles like Fat Albert, Bad Santa, just to name a few, Gridiron Gang. So I'm getting a lot of these big auditions now. And I'm like, Mom, if we move to L.A., I got this. And she's like, no, it's not that simple. But I want you to have a normal childhood to a certain extent. So what I'm asking you to do, she's like, wasn't asking me. She kind of told me, or, you know, she voluntold me. There you go. And was like, finish high school and you have the decision whether or not you want to go to college or you want to pursue acting. So I made the tough decision, even though it wasn't what I wanted to do, to pursue my education and focus more on baseball. Yes.
That you did that for quite a few years and ended up at Calumet College. Tell us a little about that experience.
Yes. So after high school, I originally went to St. Joseph's College in Rensselaer,
right.
Division II, and then I transferred to Calumet College of St. Joseph to have more baseball opportunity. I felt like I didn't get the playing time I deserved. They didn't see my worth at my school, and no knock at them. But I transferred to Calumet College, had a bigger scholarship, and I was starting. So, and I got to catch. Catching is my primary position, and they were making me an outfielder at my first college. And I just wasn't comfortable. I did it because I'm a hitter. I'm going to hit regardless. But catching is my strong suit. That's where you really see my worth along with my bat. So I had the opportunity at CCSJ, and I got to work with a catching coach who actually really fine-tuned the things that I did not know. I had no baseball training, or no lessons, no coaching outside of like a high school, a team coach. So I was self-taught, and he helped me. I was getting looked at by the White Sox. I tore my UCL, aka Tommy John surgery, at 20 years old. So I lost their interest, and then I had to rehab. I ended up signing, you know, 3 professional contracts, independent ball, like the Gary Railcats, those type of leagues, Texas, Washington, Detroit, and Puerto Rico in their AA. But yeah, it was CCSJ, and staying in Indiana was definitely an interesting feat, to say the least. You know, it's a very untraditional university, if you're familiar.
Right, right. Well, I've looked at your one statistic here, which I guess is like when you were in Puerto Rico, you had a .488 batting average. I mean, that means almost every time you were up, every other time, just about every other time, you got a hit. So that's pretty tremendous.
Well, you say self-taught. So was it the Keanu method of going to baseball games and and watching games?
The crazy part is, and I tell the kids now that I work with, that we didn't have YouTube back then. I actually had to watch the baseball games on TV. And guess what, kids? We got outside and we actually did it. I would be outside all summer long and play with my friends and throw a tennis ball off the wall. And we're playing piggy. And that's three people, a hitter, a pitcher, and one fielder. The only way you get to hit is you have to catch that ball and the arrow on one bounce. So imagine how you learn how to get reads on a ball, because you're the only fielder out there. So we did that every day from sun up to sun down.
Muscle memory.
Yes.
Well, then let's talk. We're obviously going to talk about the film, but let's pursue the baseball line. You then get into this training academy. What was the motivation of founding it? How does that all work?
Man, again, something that was not in my deck of cards. That's how God works. And I was still stuck on the fact that I'm like, I'm going to play professional baseball. I tore my rotator cuff my second year of pro ball. So injury prone. I know, right? So from Tommy John to a partially torn rotator cuff, and where I was training with my instructor, I had finally gotten an instructor after my first pro contract. So 24 years old at this point. And the place where I was training at, the owner comes up to me and he was like, "Hey, have you ever done a lesson?" I was like, "No." I've coached, you know, I've turned down the head coach position at my alma mater, my high school, Seton Academy. And I was like, "But I've never done an actual individual lesson. Would you be interested in it?" And I said, "Sure. You know, I have a teaching background. I think I can, cultivate a lesson plan for a baseball lesson." And I did it. I had one guinea pig, Jake Mullins. He went to Andrean High School. Mm-hmm. He was a two-time state champion. In his 4 years, sophomore and junior year, and then COVID year was his senior year. But he was my very first client, and he was everything I did with him has become what it is now. In 2015, all the way until I started my business name in 2018, and Juice of Athletics was born, and I went full time in 2019. I built up enough clientele.
Wow. So, then you started building up clients, you formed this into a business, but I see you say you're traveling, so you actually go on location to do this type of work, and is there other people that work with you?
Originally, I started it, and I was mobile. I was going to Itasca, Illinois, Portage, Chicago Heights, Hammond. I was literally going to every organization that wanted me. I said, "If you want me, you don't have to worry about traveling to me. I'm going to come to you." And I felt it was more convenient because I didn't have instruction growing up, so I felt like a lot of kids in the urban areas needed that and at a more affordable price. So I wanted to provide that for them. Now, obviously now I'm more stationary when I do it. You know, I'm building a dome in Crestwood with my business partner, sharing the same, you know, parking lot as the Thunderbolt Stadium. So that's coming in 2026. But the traveling aspect, it just made it more convenient for everybody else, but it was tiring for me, and driving all the way to Itasca / Schaumburg, Illinois, it was a lot. Hour and a half there, hour and a half back, you know, so, but I did it to really get my name out there because I was just really determined to do it.
Now, we want to actually move on from baseball and your training academy to the film, which is, I already had a showing, I guess, in December, and you're going to have other ones, and we'll talk about the dates, but Christmas in Chicago, and tell us all about that.
Christmas in Chicago will formally come out on streaming in the holiday season of 2026. But the opportunity itself to work alongside Jennifer Freeman, Michael Copan, was nothing short of amazing. The director / writer, Mark Nathan, they gave the opportunity to us. And being able to be a part of a Christmas film that really highlights the positives of Chicago. And you see in the skyline in the, a lot of clips in the film, and highlighting a lot of the small businesses, which the film hints at and focuses on the small business aspect of it. But we actually used small businesses local around the area to actually highlight in the film. So it was great. We filmed it in 10 days.
Wow.
Yes, 10 days. So it was very long days, but it was rewarding when you see the finished product. And I play Tommy, Jennifer Freeman, she's my big sister in this, and we are trying to save our mother's toy store. And so we decide to create this plan to have an ornament hunt. And we put ornaments around the city and for the different small businesses. And if you find an ornament, they get discounts, which is creating more foot traffic for the businesses.
Right. And I saw the clip of that. I haven't seen the whole thing, but what a tremendous idea that is in reality, but not just the film. So any other film projects coming up?
Yes. Currently, I am prepping for Alt Gale, a new TV show. It's a pilot. We're filming it January 12th. It's about Noonie Ward, a real life. He was one of the original gangster disciples that actually came out of the gardens and, you know, the city of Chicago. And telling his story, he was one GD, if you will, that Larry Hoover, one of very few that he blessed out of the gang and said, I need you to do gang reform because you're a great leader, but you're a terrible drug dealer. he literally says, you're a terrible drug dealer. He says, what do you mean? He's like, because you got caught.
Yeah.
You got caught. So he was like, but you're a great leader. So he got out out of prison in the 90s, and he started gang reform. He ran for alderman, and he's a great man, self-made entrepreneur. So I'm actually playing him. Wow. So I booked that lead. So I'm spearheading that TV show. A couple of networks are already interested in picking it up. So we're filming that pilot in a week. I'm playing the older version. I'm playing two different versions of him. So I'm playing teenage Noonie, so I'll look much younger, and 30-40-year-old Noonie. So it's definitely a blessing, and been a lot of dialogue and honestly two different mentalities to be in one project alone. And outside of that, I'm also training for Amalia Chronicles, which is a dark fantasy, like Game of Thrones type of genre. And I have to do my own stunts. Wow. So I'm playing Tobias in that, and I'm the captain of the King's Guard. So that's a recurring role. So we're going to film that film and then sell it in order to then get it picked up as a show.
Wow. That sounds like good. You know, with your experience, and you're not that you're very old, but you have had some wonderful experiences all your life. Let's hit it on two fronts. What advice would you give to a young person getting into acting? And let's use the same thing that wants to get into, in your case, baseball, but maybe just sports in general.
With acting, I would say study and get experience. I didn't do a lot of studying early on. I did it more in the latter part of my, you know, journey, and my journey's not over with. So I would say get as much studying. If you're going to go to college for it, I always say minor in it. And I wouldn't major in it because I have friends that major in this. And when you get out of college, you can't go get a banking job with a theater degree. So it's just, I always tell people minor, because you're not going to graduate college, walk across that stage, and then you're going to be like, I'm booking jobs now. It doesn't work that way. But I would say study, and get the experience, soak it up, and have fun. Appreciate the no's. You're going to get more no's than you get yeses in this industry. And when it comes to sports, I always say, if you're going to do anything, do it great. Right. I don't want to be mediocre. And so if I'm going to go into any sport, I'm going to try to be the best or one of the best. And so that means taking the extra reps, doing the mundane things that most people don't want to do. And that's the key, because at the end of the day, your parents are investing, your parents are spending all of this money, and coaches are investing and pouring into you. And we want the best for you, and your family wants the best for you. So want the best for you when it comes to the sports. So just give it your all and take those sports skills that you learn and apply it to your actual everyday life.
Right. Now, you have some showings coming up with the film. Let's talk about that. And we have about 3 minutes left here. But tell us about some of the, you said it's actually officially being released at the end of 2026. But is there going to be any other preview showings like they already had in, I think, December?
We had a lot of great showings in December. So they have been speaking about possibly adding some for January. It hasn't been formally confirmed yet, so I don't want to misspeak, but they have been mentioning doing some more screenings in different areas. We already did 10 cities, and it was great all over the East Coast and the Midwest. So I would love for them to have more screenings prior to releasing, you know, to get out there and get the reactions of the fans and the audience.
Sure.
What about Christmas in Chicago again?
Is yes.
there going to be another follow-up?
Yes. Again, they're possibly going to do one in January, do some a few more in January, but they haven't formally released the dates.
No, I'm filming a second movie. Is that?
Oh, yes.
Filming a second movie.
There is a prequel, Christmas in Chicago, 1920s, I want to say, or 1920. It's a gangster movie combined with, you know, the Christmas holiday spirit. And there will be some cameos from the first film. I can't spoil it, but there might you might see some familiar faces that pop up in the Christmas in Chicago universe.
Wow.
Oh, that's good, because it is sort of alluded to in Christmas in Chicago, you know, the it's like the fourth generation, I guess, heading into the fourth generation.
Correct. So. Yes, it is. Wonderful. So you were paying attention. You were paying attention with it. So, yes.
Well, we had in our final minute here, Julian, we wanted to ask you about how people can find out about the movie, everything. And then we're going to have you back to talk about your music, too. But that'll be a different interview. But tell us how people can find out all about Julian.
Yes. Well, if you want to find out the dates and any other details about Christmas in Chicago, go to ChristmasInChicagoMovie.com. Again, ChristmasInChicagoMovie.com. And if you want to follow myself and my journey, you can follow me on Instagram at OfficialJulianGriffith, F-F-I-T-H, TikTok, TheJulianGriffith, and on X or Twitter, whatever your preference is, TheJulianGriff, G-R-I-F-F. They wouldn't let me add the rest.
What about the Juiced Up Athletics? Is that a
separate? Juiced Up Athletics, yes. On all platforms, JU Athletics Life. Again, JU Athletics Life.
Well, I appreciate you coming on Art in the Air and sharing your unique both art and baseball and everything journey. And we hope to see you on the screen again. That's Julian Griffith, and you can see him and all the different sites he has. He's on Facebook, several things. You can also find him on the Internet Movie Database. Julian, thank you so much for coming on Art of the Air and sharing.
Thank you guys for having me.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you so much, Julian.
Thank you. Thank you.
Did you know that you can also listen to Art of the Air anytime as a podcast at Lakeshore Public Media's website, through Lakeshore's app, or from NPR? Plus, it's available on demand from your favorite podcast website, including TuneIn, Spotify, Amazon Music, Pandora, Apple Music, iHeartRadio, and many more. If you have a smart speaker like Amazon Alexa, Google Assistant, or Apple Siri, just tell to play Art on the Air to hear the latest episode.
Hey, this is Bela Fleck, and you're listening to Art on the Air on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, and on WVLP, 103.1 FM.
We are pleased to welcome Anna Marie Williams to Art on the Air. Anna is a celebrated violin soloist, chamber musician, and educator. She is the founding violinist of the acclaimed Neve Trio, which also includes Ari Nakamura, pianist, and Mikhail Veselov, cellist. They have toured the world. Their 2022 fourth album, Musical Remembrances, was Grammy nominated, as well as their current offering, La Mer. Anna relishes collaboration across artistic disciplines, creating immersive multidisciplinary experiences, connecting music with dance, visual art, film, and architecture. Through these multi-sensory experiences, she is seeking to expand the role of the traditional piano trio in contemporary artistic landscapes. Thank you for joining us on Art on the Air. Aloha and welcome, Anna. It's so fabulous meeting you. Thank you so much for this beautiful work.
Oh my gosh, thank you. Thank you both so much for having me. This is such a privilege to get to chat with you, and just thank you so much. I'm pinching myself.
Well, we're so excited to have you on the show, and congratulations on the upcoming Grammy nomination in the Best Chamber and Small Ensemble. Good luck for that. That's the current album that was released in 2025. But our audience always wants to know about our guests. They want to know their origin story. So tell us how you got from where you were to where you are now, Anna.
Oh my gosh, and where am I? I don't even know. And every day, thank you so much. Well, I don't know. I don't know how far you want to go back. I started violin when I was a little kid.
Like elementary school, like from the very, very, very beginning. Like,
oh,
what
boy.
Was the household like? What do you know? How did it all start?
Okay, so thankfully my husband's not in the room, so I can tell the full story because he's heard it so many millions of times. He's like, well, the way that I started, I will say I'm from a musical family in that my grandmother on my dad's side was a pianist. She taught piano. She played organ in church. On my mom's side, not so much music, but my mom was, get this, a champion Irish step dancer. So she actually danced at Carnegie Hall long before we ever got to play there. So, you know, it's just very like, I don't know. Maybe there's a sense of rhythm there. I don't know. I know I'm really Irish. This much I know.
Well, that explains Niamh.
Well, yeah. And actually, I do have a story about that. I'm more than happy to share.
Yeah, let's keep with childhood.
Yeah. So the other thing is my dad's name happens to be John Williams, not the Star Wars John Williams, but I've tried many times as a young person to see how far that gets me. It's not very far. As a little kid, I thought violin was so cool. I grew up with Mr. Rogers and Yo-Yo Ma and all these, you know, these very expressive, in touch with your feelings, using music for storytelling and emotions. It's kind of a world I loved it. And at the same time, I had a little speech impediment, a little, you know, cute little kid kind of a speech impediment that now I listen to our 2-year-old and I'm like, it's so cute. Why would you ever want to correct it? But anyway, at the time, I couldn't say certain sounds. So after some nudging, my mom was like, okay, I guess we'll take her to a speech therapist. So I go to a speech therapist. It was not a good experience. Don't recommend. Don't take a little kid to this particular speech therapist. This was not a kid person. And so my mom, who had a background in education, we left there and she was sort of like bewildered. She was like, oh my God, how do we replace this core memory? So she sort of turned to me and she was like, hadn't you wanted to play violin, right? And I was like, yeah. So we literally, in Belmont, Massachusetts, we walked down the street, quite literally, to the Powers Music School. And my mom, who, like I said, not musical, though she has a definite artistic background in a way, she said to the secretary at the front desk, she said, I don't know anything about violin. I just know I need someone nice. Do you have someone who's kind? And that is the person that the very next week they matched me with. Her name was Dubrovka. And she was my first violin teacher, my violin mom. And I studied with her for 7 years. And I'm thankful to her every day. And the speech impediment, to everybody's, I guess, sadness, bewilderment, because now I don't stop talking, did go away.
Obviously.
So were you dedicated in your practice? I mean, as a child, did you stick with practicing?
Well, yeah. So again, I was lucky to have parents that, while they may not have been the most, you know, they weren't in music, put it that way. But my mom was in, you know, her background was in education. And so the one thing that I agreed to without even understanding what I was agreeing to, sometimes those are the best agreements, was when I signed up, she said, okay, now the thing is, you're going to have to practice every day, which when you're 6 and a half means, you know, 5 days a week. And so I just sort of nodded and was, okay, that is one thing I did do. It was in our sort of everyday ritual or everyday routine of, you know, maybe 15, 20 minutes, but every day a little bit. And I think that sort of that habitual thing, how it gets ingrained into your day, into your muscles, into your just, you know, it's like, it's a beautiful kind of a ritual that develops. And of course, there are times when you're a kid and you don't want to practice. But, you know, having something that you do every day and that you build that sort of resilience from, you know, I think that, you know, like, you know, I look back and there's so many things about it that I'm so grateful for. I think that's probably the most gratitude I have is for this idea of building resilience. You know, that it's something that good days, definitely bad days, but things that you're working towards and striving for and learning how to learn.
Well, yeah, but then it's also noticeable when you put in that practice, you improve, and it's obvious to everybody, including yourself. So
at certain points, right? Like you can feel like, you know, it's definitely not a straight line.
Things come easier. You're, you know. So when did music become part of school time? Then when was it added in your day? Was it elementary school or was it more?
Well, so I started when I was, you know, kindergarten, I guess it would have been, and then yeah, it was just every day either. Probably usually after school, and I would have private lessons with this wonderful teacher. And then
I mean, like music programs in school specifically.
So I, it wasn't so much in the school I went to, but I was lucky to, like I mentioned, I was from Massachusetts, and I was lucky to grow up going to the NEC New England Conservatory Prep Program. So that's a Saturday program where there's orchestra and chamber groups, and that was where I actually had my first taste of chamber music, was at NEC Prep on Saturday morning. So we would have our sort of private lessons during the week and sometimes on Saturdays, but that's where you would have the sort of social component of the orchestra and the chamber music and all those good things that can be so sort of, you know, inspiring, really, for everyone, but especially, I would say, younger people.
So was Neve your first collaboration?
Yeah, I mean, I would say, you know, I knew that I loved chamber music. I knew really since middle school, high school, that I loved it. But never until I met my now husband did I really feel like, oh my gosh, this is really what I want to do. And feeling like, frankly, it's like it was a possibility. You know, it's like when you meet your people. And right. So when we met, obviously, we were just friends when we first met. And that was that first sense of like, oh my gosh, this is like home. This is like musical home. And we can make this thing happen together. And thankfully, we were, you know, really of the same mindset that this was like such a dream to pursue of a piano trio where, you know, it's such a particular medium. There's so many wonderful chamber ensembles, string quartets, of course, being the sort of most, you know, iconic. But the piano trio as a medium is so incredible with the pairings and how it can be everything from intimate to orchestral in scope. The writing is incredible. Such a huge catalog to choose from, both from the past and present. So we just really knew this was really something that we wanted to pursue. And I guess we were both sort of crazy enough to go for it.
So recording your first album, talk about that process. And I mean, obviously we want to play something from your current Grammy nominated piece, but tell us about like approaching your work in a studio.
Gosh, well, we are so, so grateful, so lucky to, you know, we're signed to the Shandos label, which is an amazing label. It's really an honor. And furthermore, our producer there is like, he's like our fourth member, you know, Jonathan Cooper, we adore him. He came to our wedding in Massachusetts. He came all the way from England. He's just magical. And what's really, it's really a trust exercise that we feel so grateful to be part of at this point, because of course, in chamber music, you're really one unit. You're really all working together. Ari, Misha, and myself, we're also, you know, we're independent, but together, and that sort of being present to one another and knowing kind of what we're going for in any given moment. That's something that we're so lucky that Jonathan, our amazing producer, we now have this shorthand after having worked together for many albums. He just understands what we're sort of looking for. And so he'll know when it's like, oh no, that he'll say it. And it sounds so elegant coming from him. It'll be like, oh, that was rubbish. Let's try that one again. That one goes in the bin. Or, oh, that was quite good. You know, anyway. But it's a exercise in trust. And at the same time, it's sort of trying to capture a moment or, you know, magic in a bottle. It's like a snapshot, right? So right. How you record something in one instance, you know, maybe if you were to revisit it a year or 10 years down the line, you might go, oh, it's a different time. I do it differently now, but it's capturing that sort of snapshot in time all together. So it's really been a joyous process, and we really truly feel so lucky to get to work with the people that we do.
You know, we would like to listen to music right now. So Soi by Mel Bonny. How did you wind up picking her pieces? I mean, they're so glorious.
Aren't they just amazing?
Yeah, they're just beautiful. Just everything that she does. Yeah.
I know. And she's sort of this, you know, there's a lot of examples from, you know, like I said, past and present, where sometimes there's like a gem hiding in plain view, right? So Mel Bonny's, whose name was Melanie, but she chose to try to sort of camouflage her gender by going with Mel, quite prolific, but only sort of recently-ish rediscovered. And it was when we were sort of putting together this idea of La Mer, the sea, the sort of vitality and grandeur and colors and gesture of the sea in all of its sort of iterations, stemming from the Debussy, we also found this, you know, this quite programmatic, these two little pieces by Mel Bonis, where, you know, it's evening and morning, and programmatic, not specifically, I should say, referencing the sea, but we just kept on in rehearsal being flooded with, no pun intended, being flooded with sort of imagery of like glittering lights on the water. And, you know, it just felt really right. And this sort of capturing of nature, capturing of a moment. Also a French composer, which is also a theme of the album. And so it just felt like this perfect little gem that fit in. And so we were like, yes, this is, we got to do it.
So is. I mean, and the addition of Saint-Saëns in there as well. I mean, oh my gosh, what an album.
Thank you so much. It's so kind. Thanks.
Well, let's take a listen to Espoir. And this is the Neve Trio. Anna Williams is our guest today on violin. And it's also Grammy nominated. Take a listen. And that was the Neve Trio. Anna Williams is our guest today on Art in the Air on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, and on WVLP, 103.1 FM.
It's so shimmery and gentle, but also slightly sad, that piece, you know,
yeah.
just a little bit. And as I listen to your music, just in general, freely,
I'm aware of just one sound. Like the three of you make one sound, and it's not until I purposely listen again to hear all the separate pieces, but it's just so magical how you just all speak in the same voice. It's really lovely. And so I want to say, do you get lost in the beauty of your own performance? And I'm speaking to you in particular with the violin, because the violin is, you can't really separate from the sound, you know, like not like a cello or a piano, which is like one step away, let's say. So do you personally sort of just get lost in what you're doing?
Well, I'm lost in the kindness of your comment. And I'm like, I'm so glad this is being recorded, because I'll just be like, on a sad day, I'll be like, but that was such a beautiful thing. Thank you so much. I mean, we really do strive to do that. So that means a lot of, you know, creating a unit, coming together. And so anyway, that just means the world. To your question, no, I would never say I get lost in the beauty of what I'm doing, ever. I'd say it's much more what I do get lost in, and oftentimes, and I've said this before, but oftentimes I will get lost in the moment of the emotion from my colleagues, from my cellist, from my cellist who is my husband, and from Ari, our pianist, who's just a magician in her own right, and also, of course, one of our best friends. She's Auntie Ari, who are a 2-year-old. And yeah, I'm just, it has happened in both recording sessions and in live performances where I've teared up just listening to them, how they just really create these incredible moments. Again, this interconnected, intimate moment that we have together where you have to be fully present to each other. You have to be in the moment together. You have to be responding and supporting and sort of, you know, like a complex play, you're sort of coming into focus and coming out of focus and, you know, knowing the roles that you all are individually and together. And just the beauty and the sincerity and the, frankly, vulnerability that they show in their playing is so inspiring and moving. And I do have moments where I'm like, how is this real life? How am I here with these people? And this is, you know, and what I really should say is, of course, it's because the material that we get to dive into, no pun intended, but the material that we get to dive into is just so, I know, I keep on doing it. My gosh, what is the something in the air? But it's so rich, and
it's exquisitely elegant.
And that's the material. We're just so lucky to be in chamber music, you know? Yeah.
So tell us about the Neve's origin story.
Absolutely. So we get asked this a lot because sometimes people don't know how to pronounce it, or, you know, it's not a word you see all the time. It's from the Gaelic word. I think it would be spelled like N-I-A-M-P-H, something like that. That's not super intuitive. So we sort of fudge the spelling, but the word means bright and radiant. However, we did not know that when we chose it. That would be very presumptuous. We chose the name because we had this very formative experience playing for someone who was near and dear to our hearts. He was someone who classical music just really meant the world to. And he had unfortunately become bedridden. He was paralyzed from an accident and could no longer go to concerts. So we went to him and played at his bedside. And during that time, we were really just doing what we could, bringing what we could of ourselves and playing for him. And in return, really, is how it felt, he would tell us not only how much the music meant to him and how much it touched him and all the degrees to which it mattered to him, but also he would tell us stories about his life and about his daughter, of whom he was so proud, of course. And her name was Neve. Mm-hmm. So we chose the name, you know, because it's our big why. It's our big North Star of, like, the capacity and the ability, the unique ability of this medium that we're a part of, that, you know, the power it has to connect us to one another in ways we can't even fully imagine is incredible, and why we do it.
You know, in our final minute here, Anna, this has gone very, very fast. In fact, we were going to play two songs, but you had so much to say, we wanted to make sure we got it all in. Tell us about what's in the future for thing. Obviously, the Grammy Awards coming up on February 1st, but tell us about anything you're working on in the future.
Oh, yeah. Well, we're very excited. Actually, we have another album coming out. It's called In Her Hands, and that's all wonderful composers who happen to be women and who sort of took their future in their hands in performing and writing. So that'll be coming out. We're recording more, including we're going to be recording the world premiere recording of a new work by Jennifer Higdon that we were so thrilled to be able to premiere. Was it last month? Oh, my gosh. I think it was only last month. Feels like a year ago. We're having our London debut at King King's Place, also in February. February has a lot of flights, a lot of concerts upcoming. We'll have another performance of our interdisciplinary dance project, which is called Rising. That's going to be in New York. And just really lucky to be getting to do what we love and part of this community of music makers. So
in our last few moments, how do people find you online?
NeveTrio.com, NeaveTrio, NeaveTrio.com. We're also on Instagram and Facebook. We are not on TikTok because I don't understand it.
There you go. You also can find out about Anna directly at AnnaMarieWilliams.com. Anna Marie Williams, thank you so much for coming on Art of the Air and sharing your wonderful musical journey along with that are part of the Neve Trio. And good luck at the Grammy Awards.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Anna. It's like been a complete pleasure.
Oh, likewise. Thank you.
We'd like to thank you for listening to Art on the Air. Our show relies on the support of not only our show underwriters, but also our listeners who make donations to this station. Your support of this station will ensure Art on the Air may continue bringing you the best of the arts and culture programming for Northwest Indiana and beyond. If Art on the Air is important to you, please consider supporting this station with a one-time contribution or even making an ongoing sustaining contribution. For information on how to make a contribution, go to this station's website or our show website, breck.com/AOTA. And thank you. We'd like to thank our guests this week on Art on the Air, our weekly program covering the arts and arts events throughout Northwest Indiana and beyond. Art on the Air is heard Sunday at 7 p.m. on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, also streaming live at lakeshorepublicmedia.org, and is available on Lakeshore Public Media's website as a podcast. Art on the Air is also heard Friday at 11 a.m. and Monday at 5 p.m. on WVLP 103.1 FM, streaming live at wvlp.org. If you have a smart speaker like Amazon Alexa, Google Assistant, or Apple Siri, just tell to play Art on the Air to hear the latest episode. Our spotlight interviews are heard every Wednesday on Lakeshore Public Media. Thanks to Dee Dotson, Vice President of Radio Operations for Lakeshore Public Media, and to Greg Kovach, WVLP's Station Manager. Our theme music is by Billy Foster with a vocal by Renee Foster. We'd like to thank our current underwriters for Lakeshore Public Media, Ember Forge Consulting, Thoughtful Marketing and Digital Learning, built to express your purpose and grow your reach. Learn more at emberforgeconsulting.com/grow. And for WVLP, Walt Breidinger of Paragon Investments. So we may continue to bring you Art in the Air, we rely on you, our listeners and underwriters, for ongoing financial support. If you're looking to support Art on the Air, we have information on our website at breck.com/AOTA, where you can find out how to become a supporter or underwriter of our program in whatever amount you are able. And like I say every week, don't give till it hurts. Give till it feels good. You'll feel so good about supporting Art on the Air. If you're interested in being a guest or send us information about your arts, arts-related event or exhibit, please email us at aota@breck.com. That's aota@breck, BRECH.com, or contact us through our Facebook page. Your hosts were Larry Breckner and Esther Golden, and we invite you back next week for another episode of Art on the Air.
Aloha, everyone. Have a splendid week.
Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. You're in the know with Esther and Larry. Art on the Air today. Stay in the know with Larry and Esther. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show